You're tuned to listener-supported community radio, 90.1 KZFR Chico. Listener-supported for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. Stay tuned for the Doctor's Inn.
I went to the doctor, and the doctor said, son, you look older than me, and I'm 71. You're falling apart, you're not living right. I went to the doctor, and the doctor said loud, you got to stop hanging out with that old in crowd. Living's a battle, and you're losing the fight. I went to the doctor, and the doctor said, boy, your body is a temple. It's not a toy. Fill up this here paper cup and give it to the nurse. Don't spill it now. I went to the doctor. Doctor said, friend, this should be the middle, but it could be the end. You better get better, else you're gonna get worse. Oh, I went to the doctor. Oh, I went to the doctor. I went to the doctor, and the doctor said, sir, we got back the x-ray. Everything's a blur. But it's all positive, that's what every single test shows. I went to the doctor. Doctor said, kid, it was something that you ate or drank, it's something that you did, and it's all in your head. It's spreading on down to your toes. All right, let's spread it around a little bit now. Everybody does. Oh, I went to the doctor. I went to the doctor, and the doctor said, please get on down to the drugstore and pick up some of these. After that, get on home and get into your bed. I went to the doctor. Doctor said, shucks, that's just about all. You owe me $300, and you can call me in the morning. That is if you're not dead. Two, three, four.
I went to the doctor.
Just checking up on you.
Went to the doctor.
Hello, this is Ken Logan and the Doctor's Inn. So I'm a family practice doctor here in Chico, and for the next hour, Ray Lager, the engineer for the show, and I will be discussing some medical subjects, hopefully that you will find interesting. I like to bring up health or medical-related subjects for this program once a month, the third Thursday of the month from 6 to 7 in the evening. And if you had a subject that you wanted me to cover on the Doctor's Inn, you could email me, klogan.md@yahoo.com. The opinions voiced on this program do not necessarily represent the views, opinions, or opinions of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, underwriters, or volunteers. The Doctor's Inn is made possible by you, the generous listeners, with your generous contributions, you, the supporters, and by Friends of the Arts, a state local partner to the California Arts Council. Since 2001, Friends of the Arts has been creating economic opportunity through arts and culture by producing community festivals and events, including Artoberfest, Chico Paleo, the True North Tour, Silent Film Festival, the NorCal Jazz Festival, the Salmon Festival, and more. To learn more about Friends of the Arts, visit friendsoftheartsupstate.org. And by Agua Azul Oasis Day Spa and Wellness Center at 1074 East Avenue, Suite K1. Agua Azul offers a full range of spa services, including massage, pedicures, body wraps, wellness programs, weight management, and detox products. A gift certificate to Agua Azul also makes the perfect gift for any occasion. Let Agua Azul be your life renewal resource. You can reach them by 345-0226 or visit online a2oasis.com. And that's A, the letter A, and then the number 2, oasis.com.
All right, Ken, we're going to... We're going to change it up here a little bit.
Okay.
What are we going to do?
Well, what's you read up? That so beautifully. It makes me feel like we're in the Caribbean getting ready for our dual massage here, big man.
That'd be great. I'll sign up.
So as our listeners know, Ken's been the host of the show for 2.5 years by now or something like that.
Somewhere around there.
You know, it's amazing how time flies.
It does.
And we kind of touched on this a little bit last week, talking about the Shalom Free Clinic. With Mr. Reed was in town. Also, we talked a little bit about Affordable Care Act and some of the changes going, and thought it might be interesting to put Ken on the other side of the interview mic and talk a little bit about yourself and what you do in the community and a little background like on that. I know I saw you last week at Pancakes for Peace back there on the griddle working away, flipping those... gluten-free corn pancakes.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
It was a fun event. It was a great turnout.
It was well attended. I thought fairly well attended for the day it was. Yeah, as usual.
Yeah, you know, it's a tradition for us. We didn't get there till late afternoon. We got there for the last roundup. But, so it was great. See a lot of great people, and it looked like things went well. I was talking to Diane Suzuki. She's one of our programmers, and definitely gets involved in that deeply every year. So,
and again, that's a fundraiser for the Chico Peace and Justice Center here in Chico, which is a great organization.
Yeah, every Easter Sunday, and make it a tradition. It's
for
fun.
Many years.
Oh yeah, yeah, many. I can't even tell.
I think
you
it was
years.
20 something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I can't even tell you. I know when I moved here in '92, it was happening.
So and great community event.
Yeah, what I like is you see people you don't see all year.
Yeah.
But I'll see them at Pancakes for Peace. And before you even walk in the door to the card center, you saw 5 friends in a parking lot. You haven't seen in a year. So
this year and other years too, it's in my mind, it's great to see families with small children.
Yeah.
And teenagers, you know, coming to events like that, supporting Chico Peace and Justice Center in our communities. It's a good thing to see.
Yeah.
It feels good.
Yeah, it's a great vibe. And we got to see the new Rose Garden at the Card Center as well, which I had not seen before.
Oh. And I didn't check that out.
It's pretty lovely.
Wow.
Right on the creek there.
Oh.
And I guess they do weddings and things like that, and you know, ceremonies and celebrations of life and those kind of things. And it's anyway, I know when they started that, it was a little controversial because it was that just nice beautiful grassy knoll.
Oh.
But looks pretty good, and you know, I'm kind of a closet rose guy. I like roses. I've been to the Golden Gate Park Rose Garden many times, and if you're interested in roses, they have all these wild names that people make up, you know, like Morning, you know, Sunshine Daisy, and you know, just they name them after people and stuff, and there's all these really beautifully colored hybrids. So enough about that. Enough about me. Let's talk about you. Alrighty, Dr. Ken.
Yes.
When did you get up here? When did you come to Chico?
Oh, that would be back in 1953 when I was born here.
Wow, there you go.
Yeah, I was born here at Inlow Hospital.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, we actually lived in, my family is from Chico. My parents are both from Chico. However, we were living up in Tule Lake area.
Oh, yeah.
Further north up the state. My dad was a farmer. But my mom came back down here to Chico to have us kids at Inlow because her mom lived here. So she got some help from her mom when she was birthing her kids.
Right.
So we lived up there, and then we lived in Oregon a little while, farming up there, and then moved back here in the 60s. I was in eighth grade, so I went to Chico Junior, and then Chico High, and then Chico State.
Yeah.
Got my undergraduate at Chico State.
And med school?
Med school, I went to USC.
Oh,
that
nice.
Stands for University of Spoiled Children.
My uncle was a graduate of USC. Come on.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
I thought it was a good medical school. I felt I got good. And in those days, that was back in 1978 to 82, it didn't cost that much to go there.
Yeah.
Nowadays, it's a prohibitive
right.
in all the schools.
Yeah. Well, that's every school. That's a whole other ridiculous subject.
Maybe we'll get to part of that in part of this discussion. I don't know.
So USC grad, USC trade. Yeah, my uncle went there for film school.
Oh,
On the GI Bill after returning from World War II in the Philippines, and got a Fulbright and moved to Rome.
Oh wow!
And there's a whole other story attached. To
wow,
that,
but,
that's good.
I was in the Navy as a corpsman in the Navy as well before I. The only reason I bring that up is I was able to use the GI Bill a bit. For some supplemental income during my time at college.
Now, what did you go between college and graduate school?
Yeah, that's a very good question. How did that work out in my life? Well, remember, I graduated high school in 1971. So the Vietnam skirmish.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like to use the word war because it was not a declared war.
The incident.
Incident, yeah. Embarrassment. Was going on. It was the tail end of that, and the draft for those of you who don't know what the draft is. Well, that's when you hit 18, 19 years old, you have to register if you're male, and so we were the Army was filled with draftees, so they were drafting because of that Vietnam skirmish, and. Nixon was president at that time, and he and Congress did away with the student deferment the last year of the draft. Unfortunately, that was my year.
Right.
And
right.
So even though I was a college student at Chico State, I was not deferred. I was taken.
Right.
I was about to be taken. So I was.
So you had a low number because it was a lottery.
I had a low number. That was a lottery thing. So right. You get one. The birth dates, it's the lottery by birth date.
Right.
And there's 365 days in the year.
Right.
My birthday was the fifth one pulled out of the hat.
Oh, man, yeah, you were done. You were cooked. You were going. It was done in a tiered system. Okay, I graduated 72.
Yeah.
But that year was a little safer. 71
yes.
was the last year they were pulling bodies.
Yeah.
And it was a tier system. So if you basically got under 125, you went and enlisted, or you got...
Even your year.
Yeah. Well, not for me.
Oh.
But and then in the middle, it was 50-50. If you were over, like, 275,
yeah.
you were safe.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so number five, I was, right off the bat, was sent for a physical and then was sent my 1A card, they called it. And then you're just waiting for your letter from the government to pack your bag. So I joined the Navy Reserve, actually, and part of the, I was interested in medicine at the time, but I had no experience. When I signed the paper for the Navy, I did it with the idea that I would be entering into a core school, which is like a medic in the Navy. So I then acquired that experience and was in active duty about a little more than two and a half years, and then was in reserve, inactive reserve. For a while after that, year or two after that. But before I went to into the Navy, I had already done 1 year of college and a piece of another year. Went into the Navy, when I got out of the Navy, then I finished the rest of my college education degree in biology.
At Chico State?
At Chico State.
Got it. Okay.
And I dabbled in a little extra credit stuff when I was in the Navy, but it was mainly Chico State. And then applied to medical school, got out of all the schools in California, I got one interview, and that was USC. And then I applied a smattering of other schools across the states and got two other interviews. And that was it. So I got into USC, and then I ended up getting into one of the other ones in North Carolina, but I didn't. I stuck around in Chico, in California.
Sure.
And then I did my internship after school down at L.A. County Hospital in Los Angeles, same place where training was through USC Medical School. Our clinical years were in the hospital as well, L.A. County Hospital. And then my last 2 years of family practice residency I did up here in Sacramento, UC Davis.
Oh, no kidding.
Okay. Yeah, so it kind of brought, and I did that because I wanted to come back.
In Sacramento.
In Sacramento itself, yeah. Sure, there's a, sure. On Stockton. There, sure.
Yep.
Yeah, Boulevard. Yeah, it was sometime we could talk about the training. But anyway, my desire was to get out of L.A. and to come up in the North area. And then after I got out of residency, I never left the North area here. I worked 2 years in Oroville at Oroville Family Health Community Clinic, and then came to Chico, was in private practice for many years, and then was in solo private practice for about 8 years, and then stopped that, and then now I'm working at the community clinic in Chico, Ampla Health, a little bit in Ampla Health, Las Molinas, and then there's the Shalom Free Clinic on Sundays, and then I do some supervising of physician assistants at couple clinics, one in Chico, one in Oroville, called the Butte Schools Clinic.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, for is employees.
Is that new for you, or is that something?
I've been doing that about a year and a half, 2 years.
Yeah, okay.
As so a part-time. Just, yeah. So I really have two part-time jobs and the Shalom Clinic on Sundays.
Right. Yeah, we all have a million jobs these days.
Well,
one of the things I wanted to ask you about, and I know it's confusing for me, I have not had a primary care physician since I moved out of New York in 1970, whatever it was, two, something like that, you know, besides my our basically family doctor those days that used to actually make house calls and things. And I go to a on-demand clinic, I guess you can call it.
Currently.
Yeah, where you just go in the door and...
walk-in.
I'm a walk-in. I'm on a file somewhere. I'm sure they're rotating it, and, you know, I have no idea who's seeing who. And there's a couple of those in town, kind of emergency-type clinics.
More than a couple. I mean, it's probably five, six, something like that, total.
Filled the big gap of no hospital, and Chico being a fairly transient place, especially with student population, and then people come here for a couple of years, and they're in and out. You know, there's kind of, you know, as everybody knows, there's kind of like three Chicos. There's Chico, where it's families that have been here forever, and they probably have family doctors. And then there's the kind of transient where people are here for a year or two and they might leave and come back and, you know, they're in and out. And then there's that kind of weird hybrid of in the middle where maybe you live in the outskirts or you're – and I'm probably one of those weird people that are put the roots down.
I thought you were going to throw Chico State students in there somewhere in that, but they're the transient.
Well, but not really.
And some of them not.
Yeah, some of them not, but a lot of them go through the university system.
Yeah.
They have university health care, and then, you know, they're absolutely that. But so a place like Ampla Health, that's can you explain a little bit of the difference between what kind of service they provide versus the service of something like an immediate care or something like that?
Yeah, gotcha. Well, the Ampla Health in Ampla Health, was Ampla Health is, Ampla is the name of a clinic system in the North State here. There's like 11 or 12 clinics owned by this nonprofit organization, and it's Ampla is their title, brand name.
Sure.
And they are community clinics. And what community clinics are clinics where anybody, whether you have insurance, don't have insurance, have Medi-Cal as your insurance, it doesn't matter, can go for ongoing care. And the difference between that and a walk-in clinic is that at Ampla or any community clinic, you have a practitioner to be your primary care physician or mid-level practitioner, and you make appointments. However, Ampli Health Chico also now has a walk-in clinic element.
Okay.
They call it Express Care.
Oh,
so,
oh,
I mean, they've even joined the team of walk-ins.
Yeah, sure.
The benefit of... Well, before I go there, let me tell you, there's immediate care, there's two prompt cares, which are walk-in clinics that Inlo owns in Chico, and then there's one out by Rayleigh Sky Park, so Sky Park walk-in, I forget the name of that.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to think, seems like there's at least a couple more, but I'm blanking out on the names of them. Now, maybe there's only four or five total in the town now of walk-in clinics where you don't need an appointment. You go in and get seen. And then, of course, there's only one hospital where people can be seen in the emergency room for just routine routine care, unfortunately. Some people do that, depending on their insurance. And something you were... what I was going to say there is there's not enough doctors. There's not enough practitioners, doctors and mid-level practitioners in Chico. It's hard to find for people who don't have a doctor or a practitioner to find one. So that's another reason that those, like you were saying, the walk-in clinics get business.
Right, because they're popular, yeah.
Yeah, and some of the emergency room patients are being seen in the emergency room because they, too, don't have an office setting to go to.
Sure.
It's a problem.
Yeah, but at some place, for instance, where you are at Ampli, so if you were to be there, you would theoretically see the same practitioner or doctor over and over. So you would develop a history with them, so they would...
Correct.
You'd have that follow-up or that...
Yes.
That relationship.
Usually.
Usually, yeah.
The only thing that throws that off is when practitioners come and go from Ampli.
Sure. Then they leave and they go on a different location.
Exactly. Yeah. And that happens.
Yeah, it's a two-way street, right?
Two-way street, yeah. So I hear from patients who have seen a number of different practitioners because they don't end up with one who stays. And that is a problem in community clinics.
Yeah.
Is the solidity, which is different than private practice. Private practice, seeing a private practice physician or mid-level practitioner in town, generally, they're down for the count.
Right.
They're here for the long haul.
Right.
If they're going to invest in a practice, they're going to stick with it and make it work. But the community clinics, it's a swinging door. You are not able to have a set number or set practitioners that stay for many, many years like you do in private practice.
Right. So in your environment, do they limit your caseload? Are you allowed? It's like, okay, obviously you can only see so many people a day, and you can only have so many so many clients. Is you mm-hmm. like, okay, you capped out at 250? That's all you have, and then they move, or they just fill your schedule as?
That's a very good question. Is that a kind of a trade secret that you're wanting to know?
if it is, wink at me. And I'll
like, no, it's not a
no,
trade
secret.
You want the truth?
Because you would max out.
You want my true opinion on this subject?
Sure.
Well, have you heard of the entity or the thing called money?
Oh, yeah.
You know what money is?
Oh, yeah, I know what money is.
Well, money plays a role in many, many things, obviously. In a disgusting way sometimes. And the number of patients that a physician or other mid-level practitioner sees at a clinic like a community clinic
mm-hmm.
or private practice
sure.
has to do with money
sure.
and the pushing of the number of patients through
the door.
It's because they all have a dollar sign stamped on their foreheads. The patients do. Sorry,
yeah.
I'm being a little nasty there,
yeah,
but the point is that in private practice or when you work in a community clinic, yes, the administration of the community clinic, or if you're in private practice yourself, you're being pushed either by yourself or by administration, depending on where you work, to see more patients, more patients, more patients during the day.
Right. Just
that's it.
Yeah, get the turnover.
Get the turnover and the dollar in.
Yeah.
And there's pros and cons to that. I mean, there's understandable reasons for that.
Sure.
Overhead, by the way, for primary care and other generalized care like family practice, internal medicine, pediatrics, and general practice, family practice, internal medicine, the overhead is high relative to the income brought in for seeing patients. In other words, the percentage of what you take in gross funds, the percentage of that is eaten up by overhead is higher than in other types of practices in this country. And so it's understandable that in order to get the overhead paid and to make a living or, you know, make an adequate living,
sure,
you got to see more patients. So sure. I understand that. But enough's enough.
Yeah. Well, again,
and so
like
there's ways against it.
Right.
So to answer your question about me at Ampla, my contract, I have my own contract with them.
Okay.
And I specifically in my contract tell them, oh, well, they and I decide how many patients is maximum for me. I am not asked to see an enormous amount of patients because I have a contract that says don't do that.
Right. Do you very well negotiate your own?
Yes. Yeah. In my case, because I'm not an employee.
Right,
I'm
a
private contractor.
Right,
so I make my own contract with them. The downside of that is I don't make as much money.
Mm-hmm.
If I chose to see more patients to make more money, I could do it, but that's just not in my way.
Right.
I'm actually kind of not mentally and I guess it's mentally set to do that. It's just not my thing.
Well, it's not why you chose the profession you chose.
No.
So
not for the dollar.
Yeah. Yeah.
Uh-uh.
Yeah. Which is speaks volumes, Ken.
I mean, I'm not the only one like that, but I'll tell you.
And by the way, I can't loan you $20.
Darn it!
Only kidding. Interesting. I mean, because it is confusing. And, you know, of course, hey, when you break your arm, when you're in need, you're in need. But when you're in that situation, and I'm kind of in that situation now, it's kind of like, well, I don't know what's happening with my insurance because things are going away. And because I have not had at the age I am in my life, there's some basic maintenance things I'm supposed to get, and I haven't mm-hmm. really done them because, you know, when
money.
Do you think you're going to, well, you don't wake up in the morning going, you know, I'm going to go book that right now, you know?
Right.
It just, and the next thing you know, 5 years goes by or 10 years goes by. But with the changing things that are happening in Washington and the whole, you know, health insurance thing kind of just could blow up at any moment, I'm thinking, I probably need to do something.
Get some of those things done while you can.
Yeah, while I can get them
while
covered.
While you got the insurance.
Because a year from now, I might find myself with no insurance.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And I would applaud you to do that. I'm doing the same myself.
Yeah, yeah.
Have a colonoscopy in June.
Yeah, there you go.
Because I have private health insurance over the last year to 2 years, which I haven't had for many years. But I did. I'm getting older. So.
Yeah, well, here's an interesting thing. And I recently, and again, I'm sure a lot of our listeners of this like age group, there are companies like the health screening companies that come to town monthly at different locations and for a pretty reasonable price will run specified tests on you. For instance, if you have a history of cardiac problems in your family, maybe you sign up for the cardiac plan. Or if you have GI issues in your family, maybe you sign up for the gastric plan or the osteoporosis. And they'll run in a pretty amazing amount of time. I mean, they get like 8 people jumping on you at once, and you're out of there in like 12 minutes. And then 2 weeks later, you get your results. And if you're in a risk area, then it's like, okay, go see your primary physician. Any thoughts on that? I mean, it's kind of a it's almost like a correspondence course, you know, medicine.
I got kind of two sides of that coin, opinion on two sides of that coin. First side of the coin is, well, that's what you and your primary care are supposed to work out. you know, what tests are appropriate for you and what aren't.
If you don't have primary care, if you're only as a by-need basis, like my arm is broken, I need to go.
However, then comes to the second problem then. So you get this data, and they say, go see your primary care because your cholesterol's high if you did the heart thing.
Right.
And then you go, oh, well, I ain't got no primary care. That may push you to find a primary care. That's true.
Or into a clinic or something and say, hey, you know what? My cholesterol's through the roof.
That's true, and they teach you about it.
Yeah, it's a place to get started. A little side note. I've seen medical professionals sitting in that same room.
Getting their data taken.
Getting their data taken just because of the cost savings.
Yeah.
So it's you know, it's an interesting thing, and I'm sure there's a bunch of different names, and you know, you see them around.
But, I think the lab test parts of that are probably a good thing. I would say,
yeah, and I think it's all basically lab. You don't go there with a cut or something. You need stitches.
Yeah.
It's just
they've got a little screening thing for osteoporosis that I've been less than impressed with. I think it's not adequately accurate, and it kind of bothered me when I've seen the results of some of those and then followed up on them. But I think the blood tests part is how could you not think that's a good idea?
Sure.
I think.
Sure.
I mean, it's hard to make mistakes on that, or you know, there's not a lot of interpretation. It's this number or that number.
Yeah, and you know, obviously, if you know, you're pushing into the reds and stuff, it's like, okay, go get that checked out. But you know, again, it's one of these things that I don't know how long it's been around. I've only been aware of it at this point in my life in the last 3 to 5 years. But I would think it's something that's a fairly new kind of concept as all these gaps in healthcare are developing.
I know, and something I think about when you tell me that thing about how inexpensive that screening testing is through those companies, and then I think, well, what about when I see a patient and send them for labs where I work, you know, and then what comes to my mind is, well, wait a minute, the labs, the you would not believe the what's the word? The drastic differences in charges that are put to patients for lab tests, for instance, from different companies, A, and then B, the issue of the insurance phenomenon. You know, does somebody have insurance or not have insurance? Well, if they have insurance, then that insurance company is contracted with that lab, and they're contracted with that lab to pay for this lab test at this at this
sure.
price.
Right.
And that's low price-ish. And then who gets hit is somebody who doesn't have insurance comes in and they get way high charge because that lab is trying to get some income because they had to drop their cost so much from the insurance companies. Same thing in the emergency rooms.
Yeah.
You know, emergency rooms are contracted with insurance companies, and that by contracted, they means they get paid a certain amount for certain diagnoses, et cetera, or for what's done for the patient. But then who gets screwed on that is the person who goes to the emergency room without insurance. Then they get this enormous bill.
Right.
That's
sure.
way out of proportion.
Sure.
And so now let me come back to the absolute cause of that phenomenon is the private, for-profit insurance companies in this country. I swear. That's my opinion.
Sure.
A. B, it's our for-profit, you know, when your healthcare system is private health insurance companies are kind of left to their own devices on the significant large incomes profits they make. There's no curbing them in our particular country, and how they can make gazillions of dollars. Their shareholders and their CEOs are loving it. Then other aspects of the healthcare system in our capitalistic society join that phenomenon of massive income is the only way we do things. And so the consequence of that is healthcare costs go up for more profit, more profit, more profit,
yeah, just
in all the
out.
Facets yeah. in the capitalistic system we have.
It just keeps rolling across higher and higher.
It's a domino effect.
Yeah.
And I swear what we need in this country, as you know, is a universal, as you know, is a universal healthcare system.
Yeah.
That with, and the specific important point about it is the for-profit health insurance companies are taken out of the equation, because the money you give to your health insurance company, the money I give to my health insurance company, where do they make their profit? They make their profit in all they can, and in as much as they can do to not supply you health care.
Sure. Because
that's the profit.
Right. The buy-in is you pay for it just like anything else. You only need insurance when something goes wrong. And if they can deny you, not coverage, but services, then they keep that money another day.
They keep that money another day. And then even when you do get your emergency, then the portion of your fee, because the system's so out of control, the portion of your fee is so large, you know, greater than 50% of the personal bankruptcies in this country are for healthcare reasons, and a large portion of that are people with health insurance.
Yeah, almost all, actually.
It's embarrassing.
Yeah,
and so there you go. Well, and like we've talked, you and I have talked about before, just because you have a health insurance policy, which is where you're giving your money to the profits makingness of the health insurance industry, doesn't mean you have adequate.
Well,
health care,
right, and you know,
available to you.
You know, all due respect, and of course, this isn't across the board. But let's face it: if you don't have assets, you're not really going to go bankrupt. You just don't get service.
Yeah,
right. You just don't. I mean, that's just that simple. If you have assets, you know, in other words, you own a home, a car, things like that. You maybe have an investment portfolio or something. And I've heard this time and time and time again, where they have health insurance and everything's fine, but now something catastrophic happens, the bill's $3 million, and they're going to cover, hey, we'll cover up to 50%. Well, you still got to come up with $1.5 million. You know what?
Yeah.
You just flipped over. You're done.
Yeah.
You just lost your house. You lost everything.
Right.
And you are scrambling for services, and that's all there is to it.
Yep.
It's just, and it's not, you know, people always point at, oh, well, you know, if you would have had a, you know, if you were more dynamic and had a better income, it's not true. That's a fallacy. These people that this happens to are making six figures a year. They're living in
have
nice
a good
neighborhoods.
Income. Yeah.
And, you know, they like to point down, like everybody likes to kick on the people that are on the lower end of the pay scale. It's not true.
Right.
And it's what's also dissolving what we once called the middle class.
Yeah.
It's
unfettered. It's out of control, and it's not held in check by anything our society or government are able to take care of. You know, it made me just think of, I was listening to the LaMalfa town hall meeting recording on KZFR a couple days ago, and it was either LaMalfa who said, I don't think it was LaMalfa, it might have been one of the LaMalfa supporters who came to the microphone, which, because there were some, there were mainly people coming to the microphone who were not supporters, but there were some supporters, and they brought up this issue about people from Canada coming to the United States for health care. And, you know, Canada has, and that's a blatant lie.
Yeah, it's laughable.
Yeah, and it's a blatant lie, and people in the LaMalfa who, you know, since Trump has become president, it's much more obvious that non-truths are purported to be truths.
Yeah, the curtain has been pulled back.
Yeah.
In a strange way, and they thought, you know, it's...
Yeah, the king ain't got no clothes.
Yeah.
And but yet, here I heard it again on that recording, you know, was telling about the people coming, like they're coming from by the droves to get to the United States so they can have health care, because they can't get it in Canada adequately because they have a universal health care there.
Yeah.
In other words, they don't have the insurance company profit makers, middlemen.
Right, and they pay one-tenth what we pay for prescription drugs, so you know they're coming over here so they can buy those.
It is so much a lie. It's unbelievable.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what I think when I say that, when I hear that is, I tell you what, person, you come with me in my practice at Shalom Free Clinic and at Ampla Health. And I will, every day, you and I will see people in the United States who do not have health care because they live in the United States.
Yeah.
And they need to go to Canada, which they don't, or Mexico or other places. I tell patients who are here from Mexico, for instance, have a no green card, and I say, you know what? You're screwed here. Your emergency Medi-Cal won't cover this. So, you know, you really ought to go back to Mexico, get your health care, and then come back. Because the United States is a backward country.
That it's, you know, these are the same people that say, you know, big government, get out of my life, but don't touch my Medicare or my Social Security. Well, who do you think is paying for that, folks?
Yeah.
I mean, they just, it's, you know, it's unfortunate. It's an educational issue.
Education.
And it's also this, whatever it is, I'm against it kind of thing.
Yeah.
And, hey, you know, it's humorous on The Simpsons and stuff, but, when it's a reality and it affects the lives of millions
Real
and millions
humans.
Of people. Yeah, it's a little sad. It wouldn't be such a bad thing if it just affected that individual, but when it affects your grandchildren and your children and on and on and on.
Right.
I wanted to touch on something, and I know this is probably a topic for an upcoming show, but, there's a lot of things that the AMA will allow and not allow. And I know there's a lot of foreign, as a matter of fact, a friend of mine, she was a physician in Austria, could not get licensed here in the United States. And after about 8 years, that was it. They said, the heck with it, and they moved back to Austria. And she's a physician there. And people do go to, especially in the cancer realm, they go to other countries to get, because they're much more open to allowing, I don't want to say alternative nutritional cures to things, than just the, okay, let's say you have lung cancer. Here's your choices, a radioactive isotope, or we'll just chop your lungs out and put you on a breathing machine. What do you want, A or B? There's no thing on that. So how does that, is there any influence in that? Is there any changing of that tide, or is that just the way it is?
I don't know for sure about the changing of the tide on that, but I will say it seems to me that I think there are little nests throughout the country where a mix of alternative care and standard, such as in a cancer chemotherapy, radiation therapy, can work as a together. But I would say in a town like Chico, for instance, I don't know that that's even possible to find.
Right. Sure.
However, if when you get into the bigger cities like San Francisco and Los Angeles, San Diego, maybe there are those availability of alternative medicine and more Western medicine working together. There are little nests, but overall, no.
Yeah.
It's really, and that's odd, isn't it? And like you and I have talked about, I asked you this earlier in the show. Have you heard of this entity called money?
Yeah. Matter of fact, I'm going to have to do some... hang on a second. Well, you know, the thing is, you know, it's a... Again, you get back to the alternative medicine things. And yeah, I mean, yeah, there's herbalists in town and things like that. And I get that. I'm sure, like you say, in bigger metropolitan areas. And again, you know, we're in progressive California where, you know, think about if you're in like a not so progressive place.
Good luck.
Yeah. Where, you know, you can't even talk about, you know, I mean, they'd be kicking down the door. I mean, you know, if you're in places like Kansas and stuff, I mean, come on, it's kind of crazy what's going on in some of these states. But does insurance cover that? I mean, that's a whole that's a whole nother bag.
I know if insurance covers it, but again, in some things I've read, like on the internet, there are cancer treatment places available where nutritional therapy and other alternative therapies in conjunction with the chemotherapy and radiation therapy do occur. One would need to hunt for that online, for instance, but they do exist in this country.
Yeah.
I would say.
Yeah.
And like you were indicating, there are, do I have a minute to explain who practitioners are?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
It. Yeah, sure.
You know, I like to kind of lay out what healthcare professionals or practitioners, what the array, of us are. And, you know, the initials such as PA and FNP and DO and MD and,
sure.
and ND and all those, what they mean. And what you made me think of when you were talking about alternative medicine is the NDs. Now, I'm an MD, medical
natural,
doctor.
Yeah.
Yeah, the naturopathic doctors.
Sure, and we've had a couple on the show.
Which, yes.
Like trying to think of that woman's name. That was fantastic.
Dr. Barlow.
Dr. Barlow.
In Chico.
Great.
And Dr. Oh, gosh, she's going to kill me if I don't say her name. Zamuki or something like that. It's in Chico Naturopathic Medicine.
Sure.
Chico Naturopathic Medicine. There's two, sometimes three, but... available in Chico, but in that office there's two naturopathic doctors, so they are they have a doctorate in naturopathic medicine. They can do some Western medicine as well, but they're mainly naturopathic.
And is that something that I mean, if you needed to have those services, would you? Can you like negotiate with your insurance company if they cover?
No, they don't. That's the problem in California.
Yeah.
In California and other parts of the country, I think it varies. Insurance companies, and included in that is Medicare and Medi-Cal, are not in our area. Are in California are not contracted with naturopathic doctors. They don't allow it.
Right. Right.
So it's all cash.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Then,
but
okay,
if you go to.
One quick question.
Sure.
Since I'm on this, looking at these different options, and I'm sure others. Now, if you have what they call the medical savings account, right, which is an alternative now to having health insurance, where you can put it, it's kind of like an IRA almost. It's tax deductible and can be used for that. Is that allowed, do you know, for naturopathic?
No. I would have bet it is.
Oh, okay. That's an interesting
concept. I'm not sure. An accountant would know.
Yeah, we'd
like better
be
than me.
Looking into, because that might be an option if that's...
Wow.
I never
thought of that.
They do vision and dental and chiropractic, I believe, is included. I wonder if...
Naturopathic is.
Yeah.
Well, that's a very good question.
I'll have to talk to somebody about that.
Just to let you know that in the state of Washington and Oregon, insurance companies are contracted, as far as I know, with naturopathic doctors.
Don't you hate it when Washington and Oregon are ahead of us?
Yeah.
I was like, come on, man.
They are socially responsible in many ways.
You know, it used to not be that way. When did they get so cool
up
there?
I mean,
what's
I
up
know.
With that?
I don't know. I like
all
it,
those
though.
Hippies moved up there and changed it, I tell you, man.
Yeah. And then in my realm of work, MD, so I went to medical school. I have an MD. And then just so listeners will know that DO is a doctor of osteopathic medicine, and they are very similar, almost exactly alike as far as I'm concerned, with an MD. MDs and DOs in our country do the same work, are licensed to do the same work, go to the same training programs,
right.
same specialties.
Process. Sure.
Yeah. Now, there are different schools. It's a DO school or an MD school, but and they're licensed probably by different organizations, but they are licensed to do the same work. And I think, and there's family practice ones, there's neurologist ones, surgeon ones. You know,
sure.
I think
sure.
they're fine nowadays.
Yeah, I mean it's
good. You're good to go.
Same
if you
pricing,
have a DO.
same affordability.
Yeah, everything.
Yeah,
and then the and you see them in the hospital, in the office a whole bit. Then mid-level practitioners are practitioners that are not doctors, but they are able to do doctor-type work. In other words, see patients for a variety in offices and some in the hospital for most of your medical care needed. That's preventative care, well care, illness care. Mm-hmm. And the two categories of mid-level practitioners are... one is a nurse practitioner, and a nurse practitioner is an RN, or registered nurse,
mm-hmm.
who has gone through a program where they obtained not only their bachelor's, but also currently their master's. So they have significant training in nursing, and then years of experience in nursing, and then they choose to go on for further training to be a nurse practitioner. And that allows them then, with on their own, actually currently, to function as a in an office seeing patients. They usually, I think they have to have a doctor link if they kind of as their, if they have clinical questions, et cetera, kind of have some relationship with some physician, I believe.
So there's a supervising aspect
it's
somewhere.
Not, yeah, and I hate to use that word supervising even. They're more independent than that in reality.
Huh.
But I think you could kind of pseudo-supervising, but they are independent. Then there's a different...
a happy sound?
The different category is the physician assistant.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Now, they are not independent. They are under the supervision of a physician.
Right.
And in a specifically by the law way, you know, like a... The physician that is their supervisor, actually, in reality, technically, the doctor and the physician assistant work together, and the physician has to literally look at a certain percentage of the physician assistant's charts, for instance.
Sure.
On a regular basis, and that's by law.
Yeah.
So, and they are not nurses. They have other experience in, I mean, they are not nurses before they went to physician assistant school. They have different experiences in the medical field and a certain number of hours of doing that. And then if they're able then to get into physician assistant school, which is competitive, then they, when they get certified, licensed as a physician assistant, then they too can see patients similar to how a nurse practitioner does. However, again, the physician assistant literally is under the direct supervision of a physician.
Now, is that, would a physician's assistant be on track to become a MD, or is that really
no.
a two different career path?
Two different career paths.
Gotcha. Okay.
They might, but they,
generally
that would
not.
Be rare. No.
Yeah. Generally, you're going to go right into medical school and
yeah.
train to be an MD.
Yeah. Now, I see. I work with pre-med students, pre-medical oriented students from Chico State at the Shalom Clinic. Our volunteers are mainly pre-medical type
uh-huh.
students, and. So some of them, you know, depends on where in their education they are. If they're like a first year or second year in college, they might say, "I'm still thinking whether I want to be a PA or a MD or DO."
Is a lot of that decision based on the $100,000 you're going to be in debt when you get out? Hundreds.
Oh, hundreds. Yeah, it's 300.
Really?
Now it's 300. That's typical. Average is $300,000 debt when you finish medical school
yeah.
or DO school.
That's why they put those dollar signs on people's foreheads when they come into the office.
Yeah, I know. And that's part of the problem.
Yeah, exactly.
That's way overcharged. The
yeah.
medical schools have gone out of control.
Yeah.
And I'm not exactly sure. I'm sure it's a kind of a multifactorial reasons for that.
Yeah.
My son happens to be, my youngest son happens to be in medical school right now and is acquiring 300 and some odd, well, I hope he doesn't mind me saying this.
A
lot of money loan
yeah.
that he's going to owe forever.
Where is he going to school? Is he a USC Trojan?
No, he's not. My son actually, remember I was saying I only got interviewed by one California school when I was applying.
Right.
He didn't get interviewed by any.
Oh, yeah.
Nor any. And I got two other ones. You know, this is out of, I don't know, a couple dozen, 20-some-odd applications. I got three interviews. Well, he didn't get any.
Right.
And so he was so determined that he wanted to go to medical school that he applied and was accepted to a school in the Caribbean, the American University of the Caribbean on St. Thomas Island.
Oh, that sounds pretty nice.
Nice little island.
Yeah.
Yeah, I went there when he started. So he's, and then that's for first year, first 2 years or year and a half. And then the second 2 years of medical school will be in the United States in different hospital locations throughout the country.
Yeah, and that's very common anymore. You know, I guess, again, you know, it used to be medical schools in this country. There's people coming in internationally into
yeah.
these schools, and it's, you know, I'm sure there's a very high academic, but there's also
standard.
A pay-to-play concept of it. And
Absolutely. You know, and you made a statement the other a few minutes ago about a doctor from Austria who was trying to practice in the United States and had difficulty getting licensure here in the United States to practice. And I come across that periodically as well. And worked with one who was licensed to practice medicine in India, and for crying out loud, she now is working as a PA, a physician assistant, which is all right.
Sure.
But it's a shame that she had difficulty getting her. And I'm not sure whether the problem lies in that. Where our licensure in the United States for foreign graduates, where the problem is in that. I'll tell you one thing that I do know. We need more doctors in this country.
Especially with the need. And, you know, even, I mean, I know that we've had difficulties. My wife broke her leg last year, and, you know, we went all over the place, and it took a very long time, and everybody said the same thing.
It's a battle.
And here we are in a, you know, college town in Northern California, a very desirable, beautiful place to be, and, you know, greater, you know, the far North Bay Area, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, if you watch the Bay Area news, we're the very top of the screen where the weather is. Again, imagine if you are in these, you know, rural places in
you're
the middle of the country, and you are screwed.
You're out of luck.
Yeah,
you know, and you're right. The bigger cities, San Francisco, Los Angeles, San Diego, they got many more doctors.
Hang on 1 second. We're running out of time.
Yeah,
and I wanted to do a quick segue here, because we have the Shalom Free Clinic, which you're involved in. We really didn't get a chance to talk about that. However, you guys are going to be at Plaza Palooza next Thursday.
Yeah.
Right here at Chico City Plaza from 6 to 9. It's a KZFR celebration as part of our membership drive. And you guys provide some services there. So
come into our table and talk to us about the free clinic on Sunday afternoons, 1 to 4.
And I believe
10 Mangrove.
Like blood pressure, and you guys kind of usually.
I'm not sure exactly what we're going to do at the table. Then there's a health fair, Chico State Health Fair, Tuesday, the 25th of this month, from 10 to 2 near Trinity, in some
Trinity Hall?
Trinity Hall area.
Yeah, okay.
That's a health fair put on by Chico State students. Again, Tuesday, April 25th, so that's next week, this coming Tuesday.
Okay, it's Tuesday,
10 to 2, and Shalom Free Clinic is going to have a table at that one, too. I would advise to go to both of those events, Plaza Palooza and the Health Fair at Chico State.
Come down to the Thursday night market next week. Just wander into the plaza. I usually locate you guys right as you walk in from the from Chico Paper Company, and I got a nice double booth for you.
Great,
but, Ken. We'll go on there forever. So let's.
Hey, I want to say the Doctor's Inn is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by the Cold Creek Inn in Mount Shasta. The Cold Creek Inn features views of the surrounding snow-capped mountains, free high-speed Wi-Fi, organic in-room coffee, that sounds great, and offers guest rooms with single beds to family suites that sleep up to 8. They're conveniently located in downtown Mount Shasta near the Siskiyou Ice Rink and only 10 miles from Mount Shasta Ski Park. The Cold Creek Inn can be reached by calling 800-292-9421 and at coldcreekinn.com. And the next and the final underwriter it's on my list to say is, and I'm just going to say this, is by Dr. Ken Logan, family practitioner. Ken believes in the importance of community radio and encourages other members of the medical community to join KZFR underwriting family. That's Dr. Ken Logan, family practitioner.
Hey, that guy sounds familiar. Ken, I'll tell you, it's been a blast. And
it has been.
Very fun. Thank you. And again, we, you know, like I said, we can go on forever.
Hey, 1 month, third Thursday of the month, 6 to 7, we're going to hear about Planned Parenthood probably next time in the near future. The opiate addiction we're going to talk about. And then we're going to talk about Roundup, the herbicide Roundup and problems with that on the Doctor's Inn.
I don't need no doctor, because I know what's ailing me. I don't need no doctor, because I know what's ailing me. I do.
prescription to be filled.
I don't need no doctor. I don't need no doctor.
I don't need no doctor, no. Or prescription to be filled.